What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Welcome to the Katie Halper Show.
Yes, bienvenido.
Bienvenidos al Katie Halper Show. Yo soy Katie Halper.
And I'm Gabe Pacheco.
Gabe Pacheco. You guys know the drill. And listeners, feel free to, if you know the words, sing along with us. On today's episode, we talk about the midterms and consultation culture with writer Liza Featherstone. She's the author of the book Divining Desire, Focus Groups, and the Culture of Consultation. And I gave a little report back from the Victory Party for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. For our bonus episode, we talked to Liza about communist vaginas, Bernie's recent comments about the midterms, which landed him in a lot of trouble, and that one time Gabe stumbled into a focus group as a tween. We're dropping that soon, and you can access it by subscribing to our Patreon at patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. Again, that's patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. We're really excited about our future episodes, by the way, including our interview with Matt Chrisman of Chapo Trap House about history, fascism, and politics. We'll be releasing that one soon. You can follow me on Twitter at KTHelps, that's letter K, letter T, H-A-L-P-S. You can follow my co-host Gabe Pacheco at Gabe_Pacheco. You can use and follow the hashtag KTHelpsShow, that's letter K, letter T, H-A-L-P-S-H-O-W, on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. And of course, find us on SoundCloud and iTunes and Patreon. Also stand by for a free bonus episode, which is the audio from a panel discussion that Walker Bragman and I did for Pace Politics at the Pace Politics studio. We spoke to Aaron Mate, Malaika Jabali, and Nomiki Kantz. Rate and review us on iTunes. Why not?
We love it. If you have a phone in your hand, just take a minute and auto dictate.
Oh, yeah.
You know, do a little voice like memo to yourself in your iPhone notes about how much you love the show, then copy and paste that into the iTunes reviews.
Yeah, you see, I'm not as tech savvy as you are. We have to do a life hack episode.
Yeah, I do this for my favorite podcasts.
Yeah.
I'll just walk down the street if I like something, if I'm touched, if I'm moved, if I'm inspired. I just hit that little microphone on my phone. I'm sure my phone's listening to me, so
right.
it gets sent all
right
over to the NSA.
Sure. Whatever.
They know. The NSA knows what I like,
yeah,
because I'm always talking directly into my phone. And then I just copy it and paste it and write reviews.
It's funny how you really don't have any patience for people who don't know it.
I'm not
saying that as a criticism.
Yeah. Just, you know, hey, improve every day.
Yes, you're right. I shouldn't say you don't have patience. You have the bigotry of low expectations. I'm bigoted against the world and our listeners, and you believe in giving people agency.
I believe that we can all learn something new. That's why we're here. That's why
to
we
learn.
Have brains. Yeah.
Yeah.
These super processing machines that we've got in our skulls.
Well, speaking of skulls, we have a great episode today. How's that for a transition?
Yeah, how about that?
How about that?
Yeah.
We have an amazing guest on the show. Her name is Liza Featherstone.
Love Liza love Featherstone.
Her. We love her. She's been on the show before. Her most recent book is called Divining Desire, Focus Groups and the Culture of Consultation. And it's, of course, great timing because we had the midterms and her book talks all about culture of consultation. So that's, of course, very applicable.
Well, it's so great that the midterms are finally over.
Yes.
And we're no longer in this sort of crucible of anxiety, wondering if things are going to get better.
Right. Because they're not.
We know exactly where we stand now.
It's not so good. Right.
Yeah.
I actually was at the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez party, victory
what?
Party.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yep. So I was doing some coverage for the Young Turks. So I interviewed her over the summer when she was nothing more than a girl with a dream running for a primary. We've talked about her a lot, though.
Her ascent from being a bartender, struggling to get by, to where she is now.
Yep,
it's profound. It's and profound, inspiring.
Inspiring, touching, moving, and inspiring.
We can all grow.
We can all grow. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the party was at this nightclub called La Boom. And I ran into some great people there, including Brianna Joy Gray, friend of the show.
Uh-huh.
I ran into her. I spoke to her a little bit. I interviewed some volunteers. It was really great. And I even got a little bit of an interview with her.
Congrats. How do you feel?
Humbled, honored, grateful, thankful, and forever indebted to this movement.
And what do you have, your thoughts on the results from around the country?
Thoughts on what?
From around the country.
You know, I feel confident that the progressive movement is really starting to gain ground. And what I hope we learn is that when we deeply commit to our values and are not afraid to champion them, we can run in any district in this country.
And what's the first thing you're going to do in Congress when you get there?
Man, we need to get Medicare for All on the agenda. That's what I think.
Great. Great. Good party.
Thank you. Thank you.
We hugged, which was cool.
She had a lot going on.
She had a lot
going
on.
Strong embrace, firm.
Strong embrace, it was, yeah. Well, gentle.
Compassionate.
Compassionate, yeah.
Yeah.
And she, I mean, obviously it was a no-brainer. The challenge for her was winning the primary, which she did.
We
not
did.
Her, us. We all helped,
we
right? Yeah,
did
we're part
it.
Of the struggle. And she inspired a lot of other progressive outsiders and, yeah, opened doors and set a precedent. And it was really cute because there was Latin dancing. It was really cute that all her volunteers were dancing, doing Latin dancing. I'll put some videos
merengue,
up on our Patreon.
Salsa.
Yeah, they were doing that. It was great. There was a lot of diversity. There was a woman in a hijab. There was a Jew. God bless him. I think Orthodox. He was just holding it down for our people, for my people, for your honorary people. There were a lot of Latino people. There were some white people. Yeah, and it was just really fun to see her there. And, you know, it was cool to see someone who's going to be a congresswoman. She's a congresswoman-elect. It was cool to see her dancing. She's very down to earth still.
Yes.
So, yeah, the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez party was great. First of all, there was flamenco.
Okay.
There. Like, I've never been to a victory party with flamenco. It's really great, great genre of music.
Very
I love flamenco.
Dramatic. A lot
very
of
dramatic.
Stomping.
Yes, a lot of stomping. And
It's very single peacock kind
single
of
peacock.
Dancing too. Like, you know, it feels like you're watching one person.
Yes. Although there's some peacocks behind them.
Yes.
Yes. But exactly. It's like a peacock crew.
Yeah.
A gaggle of peacocks, if you will. And then one goes out and the rest of the peacocks are clapping their claw, whatever. What do birds have
I
or peacocks?
I just think of very severe
way too far.
Ponytails.
Yes, very severe ponytails. That's a great way of putting
and,
it.
And lots of savory tapas.
Yes, lots of savory tapas. Not involved in the ponytails, but it's true.
Smoky cheeses.
And very, very dramatic, unflattering faces. It's
yes.
almost amazing. It's actually, I find it very admirable how ugly they will look.
Very
and they're often attractive. I just mean the facial expressions. It's like the opposite of the duck face.
It's very severe.
Yeah, severe.
Tight ponytails.
Like they've lived through hard times and austerity.
Angular and stiff body movements.
Yeah, exactly.
and stomping.
Stomping,
which
I love
I never
it.
Think about as a celebratory
Right.
Stomping is something where someone's mad at me.
Well, there are different genres of flamenco or different songs.
Yes.
So there's the alegrías, which are happiness, and then there's soleá. I actually studied a little bit in Spain. I loved it.
You know what I'm going to have to do? What? Watch a YouTube video.
We should on flamenco. Yeah. We should actually at our next live taping do a little, come out and do flamenco.
Always be learning something
Always
new.
Be learning. Also, there are couple dances too.
Yeah.
Then there's sevillanas, which like our folk song. And you know, this is, it's such an interesting history. No one really knows where flamenco comes from. No one really knows where, like, it has a gypsy, that's an offensive term, Roma background, gitano, what they say. Anyway, but it has Indian influence, and it has obviously like Spanish influence and Eastern European influence. And what's really cool is I saw an Indian dance. I went to a concert. We have a friend who plays sitar.
Yes.
And what I was struck by when I saw this dance was how much the dancing looked like flamenco, the hand movements and the arm movements. It was like a lot of that, and the drama of it. So that was really fascinating. It's really funny. I'll post this on Patreon. There's a funny, funny video of my dad, who was like obsessed with sitar music and Hinduism and Indian, most things Indian. We went to see our friend perform, a friend who plays sitar. So we went to this, and we were supposed to bring seats, but my parents are so the opposite of hippies. Like, they're left. They're not hippies, though. So we don't have any portable seats, you know, yeah, like that you bring to concerts or whatever. We picnic. We go to concerts, and we'll sit on a blanket. But there's a certain kind of sportsyism or athleticism required, I think, in the lifestyle of people who have portable seats. Am I wrong?
Because they have to carry the seats everywhere they go?
It's not, yeah. I mean, obviously, we all possess the strength to do that, but there's just something camping, like camping adjacent, and we don't camp. We don't do camping.
No. It also feels like a wandering Roma, yes, type tradition,
oh,
to,
whoa,
bring your own seats with you to go
full circle
to the sitar concerts.
Yes. 1 second. I think Liza may be here. Hey, come.
Hey, Liza.
Hey, how are you? You look so nice. Liza's wearing a very, like, badass all black punk out, not punk, I don't know, we'll get into it in a second.
Very Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, it is. Daughter of Anarchy over there. And we'll give you some water and seltzer if you want.
Both. You'll both get plain water, and you'll get water con gas.
Yeah, exactly. Liza Featherstone, thank you so much for coming.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Yeah,
happy to be with you guys.
You wrote a book that's really excellent called Divining Desire, Focus Groups and the Culture of Consultation. And you have an article out in the Baffler that's very related to your book called Sorry to Bother You. And it's in the Baffler, and the Baffler is such a pretty magazine.
It's so pretty now.
It's so pretty, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lindsay Ballon, I think, is one of the people responsible for
exactly.
that. Who's a great
she's
artist.
She's really talented.
Yeah, she's really talented and extremely nice. So I didn't want to take notes on it because it's such a nice document. So I have a bunch of like hot pink.
I like this approach. With
yeah.
The
it's post-its that I cut.
Slightly manic.
Yeah, it looks very Homeland. Carrie from Homeland.
Yeah,
she has
like you didn't take your meds for a couple days.
Yeah, I mean, I have a bunch of
you're connecting
hot
all
pink.
The dots.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it's also it's like you're so in it. Like you're making physical notes.
I know, right? Yeah, yeah. I miss it's nice to have something in your hand to read.
Tactile.
Tactile. Exactly. Yeah, very Montessori. What's your, like, the thesis of this piece?
So in this article, I'm really extending the argument in my book to reflect a little bit on the present. So in the book, I argue that the focus group is just one of many ways in which we people, you know, if we think of ourselves as part of the masses, are listened to constantly. Our feelings and opinions are very attended to, very closely, and yet the more we are listened to, in some sense, the less power we have over anything meaningful that matters. You know, because over time, the elites developed so many mechanisms to listen to people. We got better and better at the focus group, and then also at data mining now, and all kinds of different ways of listening to us on social media, listening to us without us even going on social media. And yet, over the course of that time, private sector unionism declined. And these scholars at Princeton did a study of over the last few decades, all the different policies that had been made, and found that the independent influence of ordinary people on policy was just about zero. That is to say, where ordinary people's desires intersected with some kind of interest group, the Affordable Health Care Act, for instance, then they could prevail. But independently, ordinary people had zero influence on policy, which is pretty creepy, especially considering how much we are listened to and how much our feelings are actually heard. So that's the argument of the book. In the article, I argue that in many small ways all over the place, we're seeing people reject this passive relationship to politics and get involved in trying to do something to seek power and organize other people in ways that will represent them better. There is a broad movement toward participation. We see a lot of attention toward, you know, changes in political ideology that we're seeing. Like, I'm, of course, super excited by that. Like, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez gets into the Congress as a person with a much further left ideology than most people we see at levels of government. But it also, but someone like her also represents not only a change in content of our politics, but also a change in form.
Right. Form, yeah.
You know, that that she didn't win by conducting focus groups and figuring out the right marketing campaign. She won by walking all over the place and knocking on doors and getting other people in her community to do that.
And having a moral clarity and moral vision, not to sound,
that
right?
Too.
I mean, that's, but I think those go hand in hand, right? Because what else, if you don't do consulting, right? What are you driven by? And I think that that is,
that's all.
Yeah, that's all, which is a good thing, right?
Yeah, you're going to be motivated to participate by politics that have some kind of moral core.
Right.
I think about an infant. Like, focus groups see, it's like a mother, an overprotective parent asking their child every 4 minutes, well, how are you feeling? And then changing. And but the parent is always like, I need to control this child. And I need to dominate this child. And, well, what does the child need right now? How are you feeling? I'm hungry. Okay, well, you see, I gave you candy. Like, so the child is, it's just the appetites that are being listened to and not the true needs or the development of that child's faculties and skills or
agency. Right.
Does that,
that's absolutely ring? That, that being in a passive role like that in which you are attended to, but not empowered, deprives you of agency. The thing that almost seemed like the pinnacle of the way that the culture of consultation achieves that, and I mentioned this in the article, was when the Democratic Party experimented with focus grouping all these different slogans recently, and they finally landed on "for the people." I mean, that's exactly what you're talking about with the child. You know, that a friend of mine pointed out, of all the things in the Gettysburg Address, like, that's the most disempowering. Like, that's like the least radically democratic line, right? There's "of the people," "by the people," but the Democrats picked "for the people,"
right.
Like, once again, returning the people to this passive consumerist role, like we're going to be the recipients of this rather than the agents of it.
Right.
It's very deep. I'm sure they didn't mean to do that.
Right.
But there's something very deep going on there, where the Democratic Party elites really would like to resist this participatory revolution and have us all stay in our lanes.
So at the end of your article, you go over, you say the mainstream Democratic Party is resisting this participatory revolution, determined to do things as they've always done. After extensive market research in July, the House Democrats unfurled a winner of a slogan, "for the people." It's almost hard to believe how fully this captures the modus operandi of the party's elite. It's as if the Democratic Party's establishment leaders are going out of their way to underscore that the people should remain passive clients of the political process rather than its agents. You go through also, this was really fascinating, these potential slogans that the Hillary campaign reviewed.
Oh my God.
So how did you, How did you access these, by the way?
Oh, this was on, it was on the internet. I think Amy Chozick
from the New York Times
referred to it. And I think that I found it that way. Right.
Okay. So you talk about how her campaign tried to come up with a rationale for her running for president.
Mm-hmm.
Clinton's Brain Trust, headquartered in gentrified Brooklyn Heights, sought via its survey apparatus to answer such questions as why is she running? Who is she? And why does she care? Let's sit with that for a moment. A person who spent the bulk of her adult years in public life is so estranged, both from the general public and from her own self, that she needed a focus group to tell her why she was running. This, one is tempted to say, is the alienation turned up to 11. The complete enclosure of political life unto its innermost parts by the forces of marketing. Lest this seem a rhetorical exaggeration, here from a Clinton 2016 memo are some of the slogans generated by the campaign's research process. Warning, it will not gain in net intelligibility as you read on. And then there are these themes. So there's a theme, fairness families, theme, mm-hmm. fighter, theme, mm-hmm. basic bargain slash make America work, theme, strength. And what I thought was amazing was that, we can read them. They're pretty short. But what I think is amazing is how many of them are based on a shot or chance. Like, uh-huh. it's yeah. so built on yes, the idea shot. Of that's meritocracy and a fair yeah. chance at getting something that inherently most people won't get.
That's right. So you're totally
it's
right.
So she goes, Hamiltonian the musical. Not going to miss my shot.
I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry. And I'm not throwing away my shot. It's time to take a shot.
She loves that, and she loves, yeah.
Right, well. It's totally the opposite of a Bernie type vision of social rights.
Exactly, right. It's all, like, it's, there's no right at all. It's like, hopefully it's, you'll win. It's yeah. like a lottery.
Yeah.
So she goes, theme fairness families. The options were a fair shot and a fair deal. Hillary, for fairness for families. Building a fairer future today. Fairness, worth the fight. Fairness first. Putting a fairness first. A fair chance for families. A fair chance for families. A fair fight for families. You've earned a fair shot. You've earned a fair chance. A fair chance to get ahead. I'm gonna just read the ones that are based on chance or shots. A fighting chance for families. Get ahead, stay ahead. So these are either like chance based or they are zero sum game competition mm-hmm. lottery based. Okay.
Yeah.
So
you're so right. I was so taken by how completely boring and stupid right. and forgettable they were, and how they function in the brain like kind of an etch a sketch. Like as soon as you say them, like I have already forgotten them.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're completely right that if you can make yourself focus on the content
right.
for a minute, the content is completely about the shot, like you just deserve a shot,
right? That's all
you
we
don't
can
deserve
guarantee.
More
yeah.
than that,
exactly.
And the race line's going to be the yeah. same for all of us, but there can only be one winner,
right? Yeah. Exactly.
It's
but very, you might
it's
as
still
well not
Hunger
have
Games.
Your. You don't want to yeah. have your shoes tied.
Yeah,
your shoelaces tied. But
yeah.
it's interesting because that is so the Dems on many Dems and Hillary on
so
in like
levels.
A nutshell, right? It's
yeah.
both boring, and then once you get beyond the boredom to actually hear it, it's not inspiring because it's based on some weird like Hunger Games type of thing.
Yeah, it's like worse than it's worse than uninspiring. It's like actually
depressing,
really deeply callous.
It's callous, and it's
you know,
also
it's like
shaming in a weird way because yeah. There's no moral outrage. I mean, there's moral outrage about the fact that you didn't get a shot, but there's no moral outrage about the fact that these rights are not part of our political
right.
program. So
it's
she
also not about community. It's not really about families.
No, it's about
no.
divide and conquer and
yeah.
survival of the fittest.
Right, exactly.
So the other ones
yeah.
besides a fighting chance for our families, then get
a fighting chance.
Yeah.
like you're still gonna have to fight
yeah,
for
right.
this chance. Like this is very
yeah.
and then the
it's
other
struggle
thing is,
porn.
So there's yeah. yeah, so there's competition, there's a shot, and then there's compromise. Literally it's a better bargain for all. Time
bargain.
For a better bargain, a new bargain right. for a stronger America.
A Faustian bargain with the DNC.
Yeah.
A promise you can count. I guess that the promise isn't quite as bargain-based.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just, I couldn't believe. And then one, this is really funny. One was just no quit, which is like a funny.
Like who doesn't quit?
Yeah.
Like Hulk, no quit.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get ahead, stay ahead. I mean, I was kind of struck by it.
Yeah.
get ahead, stay ahead. I mean, which what does implies that, mean? That, that everyone else is, there are going to be people left behind.
Yeah, that yeah. other people are going to be behind you.
So these are the things that her people came up with, or they're the things that, and they put out there to, for
these
people
are the
to
things
at,
that were brainstormed from their focus,
from their focus
and brainstormed focus group
these were,
tested.
It's funny. There's,
I mean, I really, it's not, were, what, it's not what you would have gotten if you asked a bunch of people, what are the most important issues to you?
Right. Well, let's actually jump ahead a little bit to, because it's really cool that we're having this discussion right after the midterms. You in this piece talk about different campaigns from Andrew Gillum to Rashida Tlaib, Ocasio-Cortez, Abdul El-Sayed. But do you have any thoughts on the midterms and how they relate to this culture of consultation?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think we saw we saw a lot of participation-driven campaigns. Actually, extraordinarily so, and we saw a lot of success from that. I mean, I almost feel like people are not even talking about this enough. But right here in New York State, Democrats took the state Senate,
right.
And that was very much a left driven and very much a participation driven campaign. There was very little big money or consultation in those campaigns, and yet, I mean, it got to the point where people you didn't even know were political were going out to right. Staten Island or going upstate to canvass for somebody and knock on doors, and it succeeded. I mean, it was kind of extraordinary. First, it succeeded. First, the campaign succeeded. That approach succeeded in beating the bad Democrats in the primary, which right. I think is a good model.
Yeah.
And then it succeeded in beating the Republicans, which is an equally important way to measure political success. And so it was. So that's that was an example, and I participated in some of those just as a volunteer. And then we saw a lot of success elsewhere. Every left-wing person in Florida was, well, of course that's an exaggeration, but a lot of people were canvassed for Andrew Gillum, and mm-hmm. a lot of people also canvassed for the ballot measure to enfranchise
right.
people with felony convictions.
Which is huge.
And that won
right.
and was huge. And as we know, unfortunately, Gillum did not win, but it was incredibly close.
Yeah, much closer than
closer than people
right.
thought it was.
Hopefully close
be.
Enough to keep everybody energized.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but I think also people should really hang on to the longer term significance of that ballot initiative winning, because I mean, a governor is only one
right.
a one term victory, but enfranchising those people and expanding the people who have the right to vote is that's a long term thing that could have really long term political consequences
yeah.
in Florida, and again that was definitely part of this participatory revolution.
I'm reluctant to even ask you what your takeaways are, because I feel like then we're doing the consultation, but I also do respect you, and I'm asking you as Liza Featherstone. So what do you think the takeaways are? Because people, I mean, already have hot takes that often serve their,
mm-hmm.
their, you know, pre-existing ideology.
Uh-huh. And then sometimes, sometimes our, there may well be interpretations out there that are true that don't fit our preconceptions.
Right.
Like I spent a few minutes this morning worrying about did Gillum lose because white people don't like being told that another white person is racist?
All right, so Congressman DeSantis, let me turn to an issue that's been plaguing your campaign. One of your donors called President Obama the N-word. You denounced his comments, but you did not return the money. The morning after your primary win, you said Florida voters shouldn't, quote, monkey this up by electing Mayor Gillum.
The congressman let us know exactly where he was going to take this race the day after he won the nomination. The monkey up comment said it all. And he has only continued in the course of his campaign to draw all the attention he can to the color of my skin. Mr. DeSantis himself used to moderate a xenophobic, racist Facebook page.
Oh, that is not
right.
Like, because, and I don't think actually that's the reason. I think that he lost again, very close election. I think he lost probably because some white people probably didn't want to vote for a black person. Some white people are racist.
Yeah.
But I had this moment of being like, maybe he shouldn't have pointed out how racist they were, because that makes people defensive. And that's like an interpretation that actually does not fit my ideology or worldview.
Right.
But sometimes we have to consider that.
Well, like sometimes the concept that some people like to double down when they're told they're wrong. Also a spite vote.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like, damn it. You pointed out that someone was racist.
Yeah, I'll take your racist accusation that's racist.
You say racism, I'll raise you racism.
Yeah, I'll show you racism. Yeah,
you know, it could have, but at the same time, it's also, I mean, as a politician and as a progressive politician, you have to lead, and you have to lead by telling the truth. And the truth was that he saw his opponent being racist, and that's incredibly important. And in the long run, for building the kind of world we want to see, you got to point that stuff out, even if it loses you some votes.
Although the question is how and to whom and what.
But I did have this. I did have this.
But can you compare like the relationship between the focus group and Hillary Clinton, the focus group, and Donald Trump, the focus group, and Sanders, consultation culture?
Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about Hillary and consultation culture and these miserable slogans. I mean, that's just very sad. And Hillary was really about as focus grouped a candidate as can be. Also, the campaign was incredibly dependent on data mining, there were areas where they had no field operation because they were like, well, our data says we have this, in many ways her campaign was kind of a casualty of the culture of consultation, as well as being such a dreary product of it, you know. So it was it was sort of the substance was affected by it, but also the success of it was affected. In two very different ways, we can see Bernie and Trump and the successes of each of their campaigns as being kind of important signs of how dissatisfied people are with that culture of consultation. Right. So on the one hand, we had Trump, and Trump, when asked whether he did focus groups, in some interview, he said he pointed to his head and he said, "I do focus groups right here."
Right,
and
a lot of nuanced responses. I'm sure.
A lot of nuanced response. Now, what's funny about that is it's in my book I talk about this. It's a very well worn conservative male politician stance to say, "I don't listen to focus groups," and it's pleasing. A lot of people like to hear that, but conservative constituencies like to hear it because it's authoritarian. Mm-hmm. Like he's saying, "I don't need to listen to people."
Right.
Like, I don't need to.
This isn't a democracy.
This isn't a democracy. I am listening to myself. When thousands of people got in the streets to protest the Iraq War in 2003, George W. Bush said, "I don't govern by focus group." Like, he dismissed the protests themselves as a focus group.
Right. Well, it sounds like I don't care about these eggheads and these technocrats.
And like, it's that, but these, also I don't care about the people and their opinion.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a dismissal of all of that.
But it seemed like a rhetorical like slide, like an obfuscation, where he didn't say I don't listen to the people. He said I don't listen to focus groups.
Right. So,
equating the masses with a technocracy.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. That's right. That's right. Nice point. That's very true. And so Trump is kind of in this well-worn conservative due tradition of being like, I don't listen to the people.
Bush also, it's funny that you said that, because he also bragged about having a mandate after one of the elections.
Yes.
So either do or you don't.
That's right. Sorry, that's right. No, that's very true. I mean, and Bush,
he's not a real intellectually consistent person, obviously.
Well, and also the all of these conservative, not Trump as far as I know, but usually there is some hypocrisy in the I don't use focus groups. Like, usually they actually do.
Right.
Certainly
in W's case.
Right. It's just not the image that they want to put forth. They get a lot of mileage out of dismissing the culture of consultation even while they actually use it. In Trump's case, I kind of believe him that he doesn't use focus groups. But what's funny is he finds his own way to stay in touch with what his base is thinking and feeling. And his methodology is the rally. So like, he tries out all his slogans. Lock her up.
He's such a good improviser, ad libber.
Like, and he sees how it works.
They respond in real time.
And the things that the base gets really excited about, he just keeps using. And it's better than a focus group, because he's playing to his really hardcore
audience. He's working off their energy.
It's like a stand-up comedian's entire mode of generating material is you go to the mic, and if it doesn't work, you throw it away.
Right.
And if it works, that is now you. Yeah. So your entire persona is shaped by the feedback loop.
Yeah. And also it can be in real time too, right? So
it's
you can do it where you throw it out for the next routine, the next set, or the next rally. Or what you can also do is you throw something out, you hear the crowd go wild, and then you keep going further. So whether it's a joke, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll have this moment where I'm talking and people aren't responding, and then I tell one joke that really does well. I'll make a self-referential, self-deprecating reference, maybe being like, "Oh, that's what you guys find is funny," and then I'll go down that path, kind of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you find it while you're doing it. So Trump can do that too in real time.
That's right. And he's also in at the same time, he's giving people a way to participate in his campaign. And that's another thing. I mean, and he's giving people a way to participate that is better than being part of a focus group, and is better than just being an anonymous data point.
Right.
Like, it's more inviting.
It simulates what the left, what, like a grassroots activism,
right, exactly.
I'd say simulates, because it isn't really activism, but it is, you know, we all want to go to the rally.
It's a direct, it's direct and immediate. It's not filtered through profession, and there's no professionals. It is you and the rally, you and the politician, and like, and there's something very gender. I mean, it's very Butch, right? It's very much like, there's no wishy-washiness. There's no uncertainty. It is a moral, like, or I guess in Trump, he doesn't really use that framework, but it is a, you know what's right, you know what you like.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even about whether you know it's right or wrong. It's like, that's what you want, and you're going to go for it.
Yes.
And Sanders has a similar absolutism, but it's a good one, and it's based on a moral, I can't even stop myself, but a moral vision that's, right? That's like, they're unwavering.
Yes.
Trump has emotional, certainty, and a, even though it's intellectually, it is,
of course,
totally, it's always a lie, because every statement's different, but the tone is the same.
Yeah. Yes.
Regardless. It's unapologetic, and it's not caring what other people say at all. In fact, it's the opposite. It's like, they say that, well, good.
Yeah.
Whereas like a focus group Democrats, if it is focus grouped without an ethical core, it is just changing with the whim of the crowd.
Yeah.
And that seems like that's the parent that you can whip, because the child, the baby, the infant is driving the child.
Right.
Yeah.
And you don't respect a parent that can't, that that kowtows to your every whim.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And so that's, so Sanders was, Sanders and his appeal were also represented a rejection
right.
of this culture of consultation, but in a really different way. So his staff told me he did not find focus groups useful.
Yeah.
You can imagine.
Get out of here.
You can imagine. Yeah, that's yeah. Yes. You can imagine yeah. that this was a euphemism
right.
for like Bernie being much more emphatic right. about
They'd
this.
They'd like it if you wore. You should wear more
iron
pastel.
Yeah.
Can
Could
you imagine?
Put more ties that are softer? So because we've found that 82% of 23 to 45 right. year old women who
Well, that's another issue is that the media
I'm just imagining like a Saturday Night Live skit yeah. in which Bernie's staff tries to present him with the results of a focus group. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
Are you serious?
Yeah. Latino fathers between the age of 35 and 57 would love to see a photo with you next to a piñata. Do you think we could just have a Corona
pinata, right.
like next to you somewhere in this? I don't drink.
Right.
I don't drink imported.
That's yeah,
but yes, all the moms really want to see more pictures of you playing basketball with
that
your
is
kid.
Really kind of you
know? But on the other hand, so he was very emphatic that he did not find these useful, but it was not this sort of traditional conservative male sort of authoritarian right. rejection. It was much more. He had a constant message about real participation.
Right.
That he was always like, okay, these are the things. I mean, partly he didn't need the focus group because he knew what his message was.
Yeah.
And, I mean, right. so in that way, yeah. you know, that and his message was always the same.
Right. I know you could do like a time lapse from the 1970s. Looks yeah. like he doesn't sit down.
His message has been the same his entire yeah. career. You know, so he had the same message, but also. Besides the actual policy content of his message, right. the other part of his message was, you know, if I'm going to do this, you need to be in the streets, you
right.
need to be organizing, you need to be making this happen. So it was, I mean, it was a message of engagement,
right.
That it was also in stark opposition to to putting people in the role of passive consumers
right.
of politics. You know, it was like, you can't just sit around hoping that I'm going to deliver this if I'm president.
Right. It's so unapologetic. That's the thing. It's like, they're both saying, fuck you, but to very different people.
Yes.
You know, and Hillary is like,
ways.
And Hillary, yes. you get the sense, is saying like, hi, maybe we could be friends. You know what I mean? It's almost like,
yeah.
and I have more sympathy for Hillary than a lot of people of our mm-hmm. politics do. I think it's kind of like a tragic story.
Oh, yeah. The best part of the whole campaign was when she was asked in the debate whether the big banks should like her.
Right.
Wall
Street, right?
Whether Wall Street should like her. And they were each asked that, and Bernie was like, no, the big Wall Street is not going to
yeah.
like Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
And she was like, I think everybody
yeah,
should
exactly.
like me. And
it's very
and I know,
I
right? It kind
really
of was heartbreaking.
Her,
yeah.
You know?
And the sad thing is, you know that back in the day and underneath it all, there is someone who has these convictions and mm-hmm. like commitments to children. I mean, I really think she
some
did.
Kind of commitment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somewhere. Yeah. I agree.
But
that's
and then didn't she say the Iranians, story. Except for the Iranians, or was that another debate?
Oh, there was some weird throwaway
like,
line.
The people
that,
who don't like me,
there was
the
some
Iranians.
Weird throwaway line that made it less endearing. Yes.
Yeah. yeah. Right.
She's
there's
like,
always something right around.
I know.
The corner,
I know. Right when you let your guard down to let her in.
She's like, don't worry, military industrial complex.
Right, wink,
I want
wink.
You to like me too.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah like we don't. This isn't mutually exclusive. Don't worry. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're in a polyamorous thing.
Yeah,
that's right.
They're like, keep making those drones.
But there is a sense of lack of consultation culture. I mean, and mm-hmm. a lack of a reliance on expertise, and that they're kind of, it's not that they're doing their, well, with Trump, it's like he's doing his own thing. With Sanders,
right.
it's like he's with the people mm-hmm. and doesn't care about the, what because it's both of them are so anti-status quo that it mm-hmm. makes a lot That's of right. sense that they don't care about consultation groups, because yeah. consultation groups are stuck in the reality of the possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of
That's right.
of what's been done before. And both of them have in a different way that gets stupidly equated, just like socialism and fascism get mm-hmm. equated. Mm-hmm. They both are rejecting the status quo and try and think outside the box. And that in itself was why they were so appealing in mm-hmm. a large part.
Yes.
And I do think that, you know, part of it is Hillary's, there are two issues. There's the content and then there's the form, right?
Yes.
And I think part of it is like Obama said he could have won a third term. I think that's right. I think mm-hmm. he doesn't have the same kind of whatever thing that Trump and Sanders have, but he didn't look as tentative, and although maybe mm-hmm. he did to the left, but I think, I don't know. I asked Norman Solomon about this. Like, is there a danger that we will just have good campaigners who offer the same crappy policy and they'll keep winning, right? And he's yeah. like, yes, but eventually when you have a really rancid product, yes. like the packaging only matters so much.
I think that that's true. I think that's definitely true. And we actually we did see a number of very tepid Democrats go down
right.
in this election. Didn't Claire McCaskill
yeah,
lose
she
her
did.
Seat? Which is terrible, right? Because it's terrible that a Republican
right.
got that seat. But it does. I mean, there
it shatters the myth that the moderate is the way to.
It does. It certainly yeah. shows that these people are not that approach is not infallible. I mean, you know, and it's complex because I mean, if what we end up with in 2020 for the Democratic nominee is some product of the culture of consultation and
lose.
Some middle of the road Democrat, like. I don't feel very optimistic about that, but of course, I hope that they'll just pull it together
right,
and make
that's
it
better
work.
Than, yeah.
I mean, because I don't want to see Trump get another
right.
term. But it does seem like there is more, it would be more hopeful to see where a better ideas
right.
and a more participatory
right.
Approach could take us.
Right. In terms of in terms of politics and policy, I think that's what's so interesting is that,
right.
like, we all in this room, obviously, our policy is to be more bold and radical. Although, as Sanders points out, none of these are people running from the mountains. You know, these are, you don't have to be in the vanguard, living in the mountains. Everyone supports these things, except for, he went through all the things that he supports, and they all have mass support, like mass
yeah.
overwhelming
mass
majority,
support.
Right?
Yeah.
And then,
well, that's what he's the most popular politician in America right now.
And I feel like there's a lot of Bernie shaming, even among the left. The whole, remember that the centrists are like, look, I used to like Bernie, but now leftists are doing it too. I liked Bernie, but Nathan Robinson does a really meticulous rundown of why he thinks Sanders is the most viable candidate for 2020.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I used to be embarrassed and not really say it. I think he's right.
Mm-hmm.
And he says the age thing isn't ideal, but if Trump tries to make the age thing an issue, Bernie should just challenge him to a one-on-one game of basketball, which
That's
he will
a great
beat him
idea.
At. And he's 4 years older than him, but he looks in much better shape. I mean, mm-hmm. he's like, Donald Trump is always eating cheeseburgers.
I don't think Trump would be in a very good position to play the age
yeah.
card when he is not that much
yeah,
younger.
It's a four-year difference, and he yeah. looks much less healthy than Sanders.
I mean, Bernie Sanders has more energy than
oh my God,
we do.
I know.
I mean,
campaigned just harder for Hillary Clinton than Hillary Clinton herself.
Yeah. yeah I mean, but it's funny. I do. But it is interesting that people are still not taking him seriously. Like I talked to my mom this morning, and she said, no, you can't be serious. No one is talking about Hillary being the nominee. I said, oh, actually, a lot of people are talking about that. And my mom was like, if Hillary Clinton is the nominee, I'll kill myself. And
yeah.
I was like, no, don't do that. And she
yeah.
and then I was like, well, yeah, I think, you know, like, but Bernie is the most popular politician in America. And my mom was just like, no, he's too old.
She thought both of them were not going to be
Oh, yeah. I mean, and she's a Bernie voter. My mom has great politics like we all do. But she was just like, no, he's too old.
Right.
And I think there's also like a lot of like a lot of progressives are old and have internalized ages.
We get accused of being self-loathing women because we support Sanders over Hillary. We should just call these people geriatric phobic.
I think they're self-loathing geriatrics. Yeah.
We can empower them too. We can show them all these like these life hacks for staying fit and the brain neuroplasticity.
A lot of millennials arguing that Bernie's too old.
Yeah, like, I mean, who's the alternative? Also, that's the big question.
Yeah.
I don't know who. I'm open to it not being Sanders, but I don't know who it would be.
Yeah, Alexandria Cortez is not going to be experienced enough by then.
Sherrod Brown. Yeah, like, I don't think he has the name recognition.
Yeah,
I like
him. My mom wants Sherrod Brown.
Yeah, he has that sexy gravelly voice. So.
Yeah.
But
Beto will not have won anything yet.
Well, that's a thing. Yeah,
and that's a fatal flaw.
I've seen some people saying they want Beto losing
your way into the White House.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just I fear that he will be the nominee, but that is really failing up.
Right. Well, I mean, Trump also
Trump plays by doesn't. That's a thing. That's like so frustrating about him is that because he doesn't play by the rules, him failing up works. Like. Beto, how are you supposed to say Beto?
It never works for liberals.
No, yeah. it doesn't.
Yeah.
And you know what else is interesting about the consultation thing is that, like, Matt Stoller actually said this on an episode that we had with him and Leslie Lee, which is a funny combination. But there's such a, and I feel like women are much more vulnerable to this stuff, but we wait for experts and we wait for expertise.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And there's so many, and I don't like overplaying the straight white man thing, but there's so many straight white men who are just so confident giving their take. Yep. And it's not questionable.
Yes.
It's just the way it is. And it's not ideology. You know, like the Ezra Klein thing. It's not about his ideology. It's just the way it is. It's just based on reality. I'd love it to be a different way.
Yeah.
And people don't realize how, first of all, how cocky it is. That they feel like they have their finger on the pulse. But also how that's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
Like, because they claim that people think and act this way.
Yeah.
Then that creates the idea that it can't be another way. And then it's not another way. And then.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what else? Anything else?
I mean, that's that. Stacey Abrams is still out there.
Yeah. Oh, that's what we should. You know, speaking of like.
She's got bigger balls than Al Gore.
If only
I'll say.
Right?
You know?
So
sometimes you got to challenge election results.
So Stacey Abrams is, of course, challenging the results. The voting results,
which were very close.
Very close. And also her opponent is a...
was in charge of the votes.
Yeah.
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 So, like so many dirty tricks. So many dirty
and
tricks.
And all of the electronic voting machines were unplugged.
Yeah, basically, right? It was like...
And all many black voters were disenfranchised.
Yeah. And there were lines and like other places with tons of machines just weren't open for no reason when they, you know. So she's
challenging
it. It's
incredible it was as close as it was considering all of the things that were happening.
That means she won by several thousand
votes. Yeah, she
probably
won by like threefold.
Probably she did.
But it is encouraging to see.
But I'm here tonight to tell you votes remain to be counted. There are voices that were waiting to be heard. Across our state, folks are opening up the dreams of voters in absentee ballots, and we believe our chance for a stronger Georgia is just within reach. But we cannot seize it until all voices are heard. And I promise you tonight, we're going to make sure that every vote is counted. Every single vote. Every vote's getting counted. Because I'll tell you this, in a civilized nation, the machinery of democracy should work for everyone everywhere, not just in certain places and not just on a certain day.
Speaking of like the gender stuff and the commitment and the non-wobbling, that is so important because, again, it's this idea that you're not waiting for some weird DNC consultant to tell you to drop out of the race.
Right.
It's unapologetic.
Right.
And even if she loses, it's a great thing to show the world.
Sets a precedent.
Yeah, it sets a precedent. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't, why? Okay, maybe this is a naive question, but like, why didn't Gore challenge it?
Oh, we have a longstanding tradition to transfer power nonviolently.
Because it's sacred.
I think there was like, I think it was legitimacy being part of the club. I think it's great that Stacey Abrams and her people don't see things that way.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that, there may even be a rethink about that in the party structure, because I was getting some official emails from the Democrats right. this morning being like, send us money because right. Stacey Abrams is not stepping down.
Right.
And that was interesting. So she's not just on a frolic on her own.
Right.
Like the it seems like the party is supporting her, right. which is
amazing.
Great.
Yeah.
You know, so this is something. But, you know, Gore was really part of the ruling class, and he didn't want to rock the boat.
Because of dinner parties and stuff?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, and it was before he became environmental Gore.
Maybe he knew he had a film career waiting out there if he didn't do the president
thing. He already had a good resume. He'd been vice president.
Right.
You know, why not relax, take some time off, regroup?
Yeah, I think he didn't really care.
Yeah.
At some level. Like, but at the same time... Yeah, it was. I mean, it was very humiliating, and it should have been more humiliating to him personally,
right?
To back down. Like
yeah,
that.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah.
And it really does communicate to people that like you're not fighting for them.
Yeah,
especially you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, well, Liza, thank you so much for this.
Thank you.
Where can people find you? Anything you want to plug?
Oh yeah. Well, we have been talking about my book, which is called Divining Desire: Focus Groups and the Culture of Consultation. It was published by Orr Books, so people can order the book from Orr Books, or they can be a bad person like me and order it from Amazon, or you can get it at your lovely independent bookstore, which mostly will have it. And so that's a good place. And otherwise, I mean, I ran an advice column in The Nation asking for a friend. You can read my Baffler article. Yeah.
Great. And on Twitter, you're...
Oh, yeah. On Twitter, at Elfeathers with a Z.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Bye, Liza.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to Katie Halper Show. See you next week. You can find us on iTunes, where you got to rate and review us. You can find us on SoundCloud. You can find us on Patreon, patreon.com/TheKatieHalperShow. Follow us on Twitter. That's KT Halps, letter K, letter T, H-A-L-P-S.
Gabe_Pacheco.
We got the Katie Halper Show Facebook. You got to use the KT Halps Show hashtag all over. So that's KTHALPSHOW. You could tag the streets with it. Why not? Thank you. Bye.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.